Hi, I'm Yusuf Dahl, and when I was 18, I was convicted of selling drugs. For the past 3 years, I've had difficulty finding housing because it is legal in the United States to discriminate against individuals that have a past drug distribution conviction on their record for life. It doesn't matter if it was a hard drug like heroin or a drug that's now legal or partially legal in many states across the country, like marijuana. The Thurman Amendment was introduced to the Fair Housing Act in 1988 by segregationist Strom Thurmond, and it's since been used to deny housing to all people. But because people of color are disproportionately jailed for drug charges, we are affected more. My goal is to overturn this amendment to start an end to housing discrimination that unfairly targets people of color. If you would like to join this movement, please visit ThurmanAmendment.org to learn more.
A message from the Fable and Folly Network. The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
Welcome to DM to GM, the show where we help you get your table started with confidence. I'm making that up. I am your GM with the End of Time and Other Bothers, Sean Howard.
We do help tables get confident, and I'm your DM from Dungeons & Dragons, Russ Moore.
And today, we're super excited to talk about two topics that have been sent in. One by this really cool fan named Sean from Alba. Okay, it's me.
What's your question? Give it to us. Lay it on
us. Okay, so I think one of the most challenging things about starting to GM a PBTA game powered by the apocalypse is this idea of partial success.
Yeah.
I thought it would be sort of fun to just sort of jam on like
what that is and what that means. Yeah.
Yeah. So like in most, I don't want to say most, but in a lot of the systems that sort of were coming up in the early days, like that sort of birthed, you know, sure, the tabletop RPGs we know today, generally have this idea of success, strong success, like critical success, and failure, and maybe critical failure.
Yeah.
So it was this idea that you succeeded or you failed, and then there were two funny outcomes, right? Like,
yeah,
you critically succeeded or you critically failed.
Or you
failed
fall off the cliff and
stabbed yourself.
Yeah.
Right. Stabbed yourself in the throat. Like, yep. Beautiful. So Powered by the Apocalypse was not the first, but one of the systems that really brought to the forefront this idea of partial success. So it's in the middle.
Yeah.
So you in Power of the Apocalypse, you succeed if you roll, well, changes in some of the games, but basically you can have a roll that's a hard success. You get what you tried to do.
Yeah.
And you can have a fail where you did not get what you tried to do successfully.
And something often worse happens.
Yep, a hard move. And then the middle is a partial success. And the hard part about the partial success as a GM that hasn't done it before is you don't have a lot of time, it feels like, to address it.
Yeah.
And it means they succeeded. So that's the weird part. You have to give them what they tried to do. But there's a consequence. And a lot of the different PBTA games come up with these lists of like, they're trying to be like, right? They're trying to help and be like, you can take something away. You can just come up with this big long list. They can drop something. But on the fly, I think it's hard sometimes to come up with something that's.
Yeah. Cause if you're coming at it from like the strict, like DC, like you got to beat a 15 to be able to do this thing and they beat it. It's easy. Cause you just give it to them. If you don't. Now there's this middle ground where your brain has to go, okay, they get the thing, but they also didn't get the thing, kind of, sort of, not really. But you're trying to mess up something else down the road for them.
You got it. And it's really hard. And so what often happens as a GM, I think when you're starting down that path, it did for me and a lot that I, like, is that we go to one, right? Yeah. It's often you've dropped something or like, I remember early on Darcy had to cross a chasm and she wrote a partial success.
Yeah.
And part of me was like, oh, I was like, why did I make this a role? Because if she fails, like, this could be death, right? Yeah. Like she's top of a mountain. So, but she got a partial success and my brain was like, okay, so you made it. I'm like, what, do you hit your head on the wall? Like, yeah. So I just said, you dropped your book.
Don't make people drop books, Sean. That's where arguments happen.
I know. I hope my librarian friend is not listening. That's right. Sorry, Michelle. So it really takes, anyway, so it's something that, first of all, I just want anyone who's starting PBTA, I want them to realize it's okay. Is it when you listen to people, like when you listen to someone like Rev from The Crit Show, sure, right? They're so good. They do this option thing. They often love this option thing. You can choose this can happen, or this. And there's always a mix of bad.
Sure.
Right. Yep. And the player's like, oh, that's a hard choice.
Yeah.
So it can sometimes feel daunting because you're going to compare yourself to someone you listen to who's been doing it for a long time.
Yes.
So that's my first thing. It's like, don't worry. It's okay. You will get better at partial success.
It's like any, you know, muscle memory practice thing, right? Like, the more you play with the characters, the more you play in the world, the more you play with the bad things that you're trying to impose upon them, you're going to start to understand what the characters have that's going to help them down the road. Like, knowing the character sheet, knowing what they value, knowing all that sort of stuff, because then you can take it away bit by bit until they become shells of their former self.
But that's the key to it. That's what interesting was the breakthrough for me. You have to be, I don't want to say the word evil. You have to be harsh,
yeah,
with the players, which is not something we generally are allowed to do in a traditional D&D if you came up in the realm of D&D or one of those games. Right?
Your harsh moves only really come on those critical failures.
Critical fail. Yeah. And even then, you'll often, like, you trip and stab your... Like, yeah. They're not...
You're trying to be funny more than anything.
Yeah. It's very, like... It generally doesn't go well if you kill a character. I know someone who did this recently. They killed a character because they rolled a critical fail on fumbling a grenade using a different system.
Right.
But it was a D20 system. And so they killed the character. And that did not go down well with the character or the players. So it just felt feels too cruel, right? Too sudden. So in Powered by the Apocalypse games, you have this idea of a hard move and a soft, anyways, but you basically do have to think more cutting to the players, the characters. You literally are thinking, what is a really awful consequence that you can put forward?
That's going to trip
that
them up.
Changes your brain. Yeah.
To me, it's like looking down the hallway and thinking, okay, well, they got into this hallway, and now 10 steps down the hallway, what is going to happen? So that's where the consequence comes in. And what can you take away, or what can you impose upon them? Because it's not always taking it away. It could be imposing an environmental aspect as well.
Yes.
That's going to cause them to have another, possibly harder, hurdle to get over.
I love this hallway idea. Let's take this hallway idea.
Yeah.
So the first thing that happens is when I was early on, I'm like, you got a partial success, so you make it into the hallway. And then I'm thinking, oh, what do I do? Do you lose something? You don't have something? I don't know. Crossing the threshold, you know what? You know what I mean? Yeah. Or I would start to then, my next move was often, as I got a little more used to it, I'd be like, oh, something happens off camera.
Sure.
Right? So that 10 steps down, you're going to find this thing. But you don't really, the player doesn't really feel like it's connected, yeah, right? Like,
it's like,
okay, I made it
I
in,
did a thing, right? And now you're punishing me for something completely unrelated at that point.
Right. It just feels disconnected. But, you know, you can often have a gleam in your eye and go, well, you'll find out what went wrong. But, you know, but there's a lot of things you have to think about, harder moves. I don't want to say hard move because that's a specific thing, but you have to think about real consequences. You have to be mean.
Yeah.
So for, but sort of, it feels that way if you're not used to it. So let's take the, Russ rolls, stepping into this hallway. It's spooky. It's scary. He gets a partial success.
Seven.
Russ steps across the threshold and disappears. And I turn to the rest of the party. What do you do?
Yeah.
Right? So Russ got in the building.
Yep. But now somewhere else.
Nobody knows where he is. Okay? So this would be an example of a hallway where so we set it up. Like maybe there's a door that's glowing and everyone's afraid of what to do. And so Russ says, I go in. And so I say, roll. And that would be our setup. So that's one thing you could do. The next person rolls and critically fails. That's a hard move. I might have them erupt in flames, screaming and zap, and they're gone.
Right?
And they take damage and nobody knows where they are. Just as an example of how do you make that harsher?
Yeah.
Right. How do you make it harsher?
So yeah, the same outcome or similar outcome happens, but in a more dramatic way.
It's one thing you can do. Right? You can also have a fail just cause immediate damage. They go to open the door and a giant javelin thrusts out, you know? Like, it's spring-loaded on the other side of the door. It's a trap. Might be a hard fail, right? And they've literally got stuck in their chest.
Yeah.
Like, it's awful.
It's a very clear
hard move.
Yeah.
Right. But now, so the last person, you know, pulls the person off. You know, Amy pulls the person off, patches them up, and she decides to knock through the door because she's smart.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she climbs in a window, but I'm like, the same thing applies. You roll. She gives me that look.
Uh-huh.
And she gets a partial success, right? So now you're like it's like, what do you do? You're like, cause like even now, right? I'm like, my brain's like, well, I've already done this. I've done that. So it's like, one thing my brain will now turn to is what matters to Amy?
Right.
This, and I might be like, you go inside, but Donnie or whoever, someone else, like something else, the owl, I forget the owl's name.
Guacamole.
Is no longer on your shoulder.
Yeah.
Right? So you can like, you really want, so in a moment where you're lost,
yeah.
You want to think, and you gave the clue this earlier, what matters to this character?
Yeah.
Is something, and it's, and then you move against that. So they get, and that's dark.
Yeah.
Because that means they got what they wanted, but at the cost of someone or something that they care about. It's harsh, but that escalates the situation for them. They're more vested interest now in this story.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
But hard to do on the fly.
It is.
It really, even now, I still am not as good as like Rev. I listen to Crit Show, and I'm going to give so many plugs Crit Show, and I'm just like Rev, if you haven't heard Crit Show, he has this thing he does where he's like, so he would say to Amy, I won't do it as well as him, but he would be like, okay, Amy, you can get inside, but you're going to attract immediate unwanted attention.
Yeah.
Or you get inside and guacamole is no longer on your shoulder. Or you get inside, but no one else does. And yeah, and the person is like, what's the price I want to pay?
Yeah.
Right? So that's another, like, but that's like the, I think that's like the, that's when you've really mastered it, I think, when you can just like fire out three horrible, like dark things, right? And in that case, they'd often take the first one, like, oh, I attract unwanted attention. And then you make that awful, right? Like it is not, it's, you know, good.
Because, it seems like in that moment that the unwanted attention is something that we can now deal with as a party, whereas I've lost a friend or I'm no longer able to reconnect with my team. Those are tough, but the unwanted attention is going to be just as hard as all of those other things.
And when I listen to Rev or someone like Rev and a Crit Show, when they're doing it, you can sense the joy when they give up three options where there's no easy select.
Yeah. Like you always get the thing you want, but something's gonna happen,
there's a
baby.
Bad cost. Yeah. And so that can be fun too. But you don't, again, that's the upper level. You don't have to go there.
Yeah.
I think the middle layer is thinking about, okay, what the first thing to do is to like, what's a dire thing that can happen to the player?
Yeah.
Right. What's a dire thing? They get what they want, but what can hurt them? And then the second thing is when you're not coming up with ideas is what matters to them? And that's often more, what's the word? Devious.
It is. Yeah.
Right.
I think a lot of these games, the character creation and like some of the world creation can sometimes happen around the table too. So you get a lot of that. that want and desire from your players and characters, what they're looking to get out of this in that creation when you're first sitting down at the table. Yeah. So you listen to all those connecting points that the characters are making between themselves to give them the backstory, and write all those little things down. The parents who disappeared, or the pet that you carry around with you. Write all of that down, because that's going to be the fodder for the fodder for the game that you're about to play, because you can then take it all away, because you want it. It's yours.
And if there's something that your characters like to do for fun, you can take that away, right? As I take away Egerton's ability to eat fairy cakes. Right? His mouth sews up if it's a horror show, right? Yeah. Like, that's awful. But, that then becomes fun for the player to play, right? Like, constantly trying to smush it up his nose. I don't know what he would do, something like that.
Yeah,
right?
He would.
But yeah, better than the other options. Family show.
Okay. So partial success is about remember to give the player what they tried to do, because they've succeeded. If you've walked into the room, you've made it into the room. But then think about a few steps down the way, what. If you were to take something away from them or restrict them in some way, what's going to make it harder for them moving forward? And applying that to all of those mid-success rolls, which you're going to roll, majority of end up being mid-success. Yes.
Yeah, you will get better at this because you're going to do it a lot. And the thing to start to do is to try and make it more and more immediate, right? And then it's really fun when you're getting good at immediate. There's immediate consequence, guacamole disappears, like someone's caught on fire, and then all of a sudden they draw a partial success and you're like, oh yeah, no, the door opens, you go in and you just start writing.
Yeah.
And the whole table will be like,
Something's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. So you can sort of save the something happens off screen, right? It can become a bigger move, right? It is a bigger move. You're going to make a big move.
Yeah. Once you got them paranoid, then yeah.
Yeah. And if you're going to make an off-scene move, make it big.
Yeah.
Like the village that sent them to this house to do whatever is now being raided and on fire and people are screaming. Like, they don't know that.
Yeah. They won't know that until they get up to the top of this building, and then they can see out the window.
Yeah. They're like, hey, everyone, we got the...
Oh.
Right? A horde of creatures running up from the village.
And if they're like, my table, then they will just slowly back away and pretend they were never there.
Like my table too.
Move on. And then that's your next adventure. So partial success, do it, practice it, listen to people, how they do it, just to kind of get some experience. Yeah. A lot of games kind of build in those three questions like that Sean was talking about, rev using. Some of them have those pre-built in the Game Master section. Look at them, use them, get comfortable with them. And yeah, know that.
Just practice.
Just practice, because you're going to be doing that a lot. And at first, you're probably not going to do it what you think is very well, but you will get better.
And I'll tell you, it will become your favorite thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's already started to move into my D&D games, so it's great. Until next time, send us more questions. That's what we want. DM2GMcast@gmail.com, Facebook, Twitter, Discord. Links are in the description. We want to see you over there and chat with you about games. It's going to be fun. But until next time, get your game started.
And we look forward to talking to you soon.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
Welcome to Beyond the Dark.
Sub-level 19 was nothing like the other floors at Machine Co. There were no alabaster workbenches, no spotless white carpets. Here, it was dank, dark, and that noise. A humming, throbbing sound like a sickly heartbeat hiding behind the whir of a great machine. A large metal cage loomed out of the darkness, backlit by an iridescent blue monitor, on which a cursor blinked idly. A metal panel slid out of an aperture in the cage near the monitor, and suddenly the cursor came to life. It read, "Insert hand here."
Beyond the Dark, a sci-fi anthology by Mark R. Healy, creator of The Strata. Find it at beyondthedarkpodcast.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts.